CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, folks, and welcome to another show of Auto Central. And wherever you are listening to this show, we bring it to you every fortnight and we play it out every week. And my name is George Meany. I'm the host of the Auto Central show today, and I'm joined by none other than Lawrence Meany. Welcome back, Lawrence.
Always good to be back, George. I love doing this show.
I think it's one of the coolest shows in South Africa in terms of automotive today. And then we have Wandile Sishi in the house.
In the house again. Thank you for having me again, George. I'm actually, last night I decided that I'd change my life. So I'm on a new cleanse to clean my soul. So hopefully that's going to impact today's show.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that, Wandi. So so welcome back. And then none other than Martin Pretorius back
Hello,
with us this
George.
Week.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you all again and great to be back on the show.
Great stuff. Let's launch straight into the news. And I'm sure that people have been victims of car crime. Wandi, have you ever been a victim of car crime?
So I haven't like personally been a victim of car crime, but when I was like 12 or something, there was an attempted hijacking on my mother's car and I was in the car. But other than that, no, I've been taking all the rules that I hear and staying vigilant. So
okay.
Thank God I haven't.
Martin, have you been a victim of car crime?
Numerous times, George, actually. But then again, I've been driving for the last 27 years, so.
Okay, all right. Give us one or two of those incidents. Not too much of the
Most of them were my own stupidity. The one specifically comes to mind, one Sunday morning after church, Nohol, on the way to go visit my parents, I stopped and I put my Ray-Bans on top of my car's dashboard. And which is where I learned one of the important lessons: hide your valuables out of sight.
I was gone for
5 minutes and I came back to a car with a broken side glass and no more Ray-Bans.
Oh, goodness gracious me. You don't want your Ray-Bans stolen. You can't look like a pilot anymore. Lawrence, have you...
I've got new ones.
Yeah, George, much like Martin, just car break-ins. Haven't really had the misfortune of a hijacking attempt, but yeah, they broke into my car in 97, car radio and my CD folder.
Oh, goodness.
And then a few years later, they broke into the car and stole my daughter's pram. So yeah.
Stole the pram?
Wow.
Yeah, dude, was in the boot. Anything that has, if it's got wheels, might as well just... use it to try whatever else they stole. But yeah, is what it is.
They stole Lawrence's pram. Well, there you go. I've never heard of a pram being stolen before, but now we know of one. Well, how do you avoid becoming a victim of car crime? You know, I don't know if you guys have got any pearls of wisdom, but according to a preliminary police reports and data from more than 1.1 million vehicles registered with Tracker, vehicle crime is on a steep increase. And I bet you all them a couple of weeks ago. We pulled them the lockdown, people that take advantage of during lockdown. I think we had a name for it. I can't remember what it was now. It doesn't matter.
COVID preneurs.
Say that again, Lawrence.
COVID preneurs.
That's what they are. The COVID preneurs. So how do you avoid COVID preneurs? And observing dramatic increases in hijackings and motor vehicle theft, as criminal syndicates work our country and prey on the citizens, how do you, you know, look after yourself? One way is to make sure that when you park your car, you lock it, and as Martin says, put your valuables out of sight. Any other kind of ideas around avoiding crime, Wandi?
Outside of just keeping things out of sight, you have to be looking at your surroundings. So that's the thing that I basically go with wherever I go, is to just keep looking around, keep, you know, looking around your vehicle and ensuring that you're not being followed, or that someone is, you know, or that you look vulnerable.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, Lawrence, what about stopping next to the road? Let's say you have a tire failure. Let's say you have a car breakdown. People sometimes don't hesitate to stop on the side of the road.
If it's daytime and you are quite aware of your surroundings, then yes. If it's nighttime and you don't know where you are, keep driving until you find lights. Just be vigilant. My pearl of wisdom would be keep a pet snake in your car.
Keep a pet snake in your car. Then you won't get your Ray-Ban.
Yeah, it won't come near your car.
Exactly. All right. So I suppose the advice from Lawrence there is if you do have a flat tire, and you are in a difficult spot or a bad spot and you feel uncomfortable, your rim of your car is worth a lot less than your life is worth. Rather just drive on the thing. You can drive slowly. And I always say keep the car moving. Right, Martin? Yeah. I mean, just keep the car moving.
That is correct, George. In fact, last year, towards the end of the year, I wrote off a tire on my own car because I picked up a flat on the R21. And I just said, there's no way I'm going to stop here at night in the dark. I made it through to Monument Park, and only then did I call for help because my car's flat was dead as well.
Well, there we go. That's the right thing to do. And you're sitting here with us because more than likely you did that. Drive on that tire and rim. Just drive slowly because you can't drive it at high speed with a flat tire. If you don't have run flats, just crawl along slowly. Think about it this way. The average human being walks at what speed?
5 kilometers an hour about.
Yeah.
4 Ks.
4-5 Ks an hour. I mean, Usain Bolt, how fast does he do the 100-meter sprint? 10 seconds?
6 seconds.
Six seconds?
11 seconds.
Let's check it out. 100-meter sprint world record. Let's see what the 100-meter sprint world record is. 9.58 seconds by Usain Bolt in 2009. So if Usain Bolt does 100 meters in 9.58 seconds, that means that what is the average running speed of a human being?
10 meters per second. Yeah, but that's in sprint.
Yeah, no, that's in sprint.
That's in full.
Not even.
No, not even. Not even. I mean, going on the treadmill data, a good fast run is about 11 k's an hour.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, I reckon from my little bit of Googling right now that 11, 12 kilometers an hour is probably a good sprinting speed for a human. So if you're doing 15, 20 kilometers an hour in your car, you are driving faster than any being can keep up with. Well, average human being, that is not Usain Bolt. And just keep going at that speed. All you need to do is keep the car moving. Even if you don't have a flat tire, would you guys agree that timing the traffic lights, timing the way you drive, timing the traffic, don't be a racer because you can keep your momentum going. Even if it's at 10, 20 kilometers an hour, you're not going to be a victim of crime.
That's true. No, I completely agree with that. Yeah, my dad always tells me that on the road, you must always not drive for yourself, but you must drive for everybody else. So that just goes in saying that you have to drive defensively, essentially, and making sure that you are in the best position to get out of trouble.
Exactly. Exactly. So to finish off the story, it's estimated to take place every 40 to 54 minutes in South Africa. And most hijackings occur when the victim arrives at home. The escape path is blocked and hijackers pull up behind the victim's car at the entrance gate. So be vigilant. Have a look around you. Be very aware. Don't be on the phone when you pull into driveway. Wait in the street before you pull into your driveway so that you've got a getaway angle. When I drive defensively, I always make sure that there is always an exit path. It has to be an exit path no matter what you have to drive. Make sure there's an exit path. Any final tips on trying to avoid car crime?
Just be vigilant. Keep your head on a swivel. And it's if you spot something out of the ordinary, just rather not take a chance, keep on driving.
Yeah, your life's much more important than that phone call you need to make or that rush you're in. And then in more news, Mitsubishi Motors announces that their midterm business plan has a renewed focus on Africa. So Mitsubishi Corporation, MMC, announced a three-year midterm plan, which is from 2020 to 2022. They called it Small But Beautiful, to concentrate its management resources in core regions and technologies, including Africa. This midterm plan announced... Midterm plan. I think somebody's stolen my words. The midterm plan announced in Japan on Monday focuses on cost rationalization and profitability enhancement towards a solid management foundation aiming at sustainable growth after a three-year period. Now, I believe there is one car that's going to be culled in this lot. Tell us about that car, Martin.
Yeah, right. So Mitsubishi announced a couple of years ago that they were considering to stop production of the big body Pajero. So not the normal Pajero Sport, the older big body car. It's almost 20 years old and its market segment has actually shrunk in favor of smaller SUVs, which is why the Pajero Sport is now very high tech and the normal Pajero has basically not received an update in, I think, 6 years.
Wow.
Now, as a result of this, as a combination of factors, Mitsubishi is now canning the big body Pajero. We'll still get them for as long as Mitsubishi South Africa can get stock, but that won't be for much longer. Also, Mitsubishi is planning to shutter that entire plant as well. So there's obviously some bigger cost-cutting or rationalization program going on at the moment.
That's very interesting. So, you know, Mitsubishi changing their plans, focusing on Africa. I mean, I've always liked the Mitsubishi Pajero. Now, when you say the Mitsubishi Pajero big body, is that the Mitsubishi that everybody is used to seeing in South Africa?
Yeah, that's the nameplate. I think it's 38 years old now, the nameplate. It started out basically smaller than the current Pajero Sport, and then through the next two generations, it just kept growing bigger and bigger and bigger. We call it the big body because it's, well, physically a bit wider and a bit taller than the normal Pajero Sport.
Okay, interesting. And then in other news, Victory for Motorists says driver's license validity is extended till the end of January. Lawrence, what do you think of this? Has anything in your life expired in terms of licenses?
It has indeed. My driver's license expires in November.
Oh.
So I need to go and get that sorted. But I'll be in and amongst all of the people whose driver's license and stuff have expired in that period that they were referring to. It's really important to note that this is just for drivers, learners, and PDPs. It has not to do with your car's license. Oh. If your car's license has expired, you need to get that sorted out, well, last week already, because that ends on the 31st of August.
Very interesting and very important piece of news, though, is that your car license does not form part of this extension. You wanted to say something, Martin?
No, George, not particularly.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just trying to think now.
I thought you went off mute there for a second.
I just wonder when my local licensing department will be back open again, because I actually applied for a renewal on my driver's about a month before lockdown.
Oh.
It wasn't ready when the lockdown thing happened. So I wonder what's the case with my own driver's license now.
Oh, interesting stuff. Yeah. So there you have it. Vehicle licenses are vehicle licenses. I take that back. Driver's licenses validity period extended until the end of January. And but you know what? People are lazy. You know, so while the government has come to the party and the AA was a pivotal kind of role player in getting this extension, but people are lastminute.com. I mean, I've found that, you know, now that this extension is in place, how many people are going to wait until the end of December before they even start to think about their driver's licenses?
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a lot. I mean, my license disc is expired, so expired until May. So I think more so than anything, I just don't want to risk getting sick. That's why I'm going to hold out as long as I can.
Yeah, you know, they should move this online, I'd say. Anyway, let's move on from that before we get into negative territory. Reynolds has just given electric cars to every household in an isolated French town. Wendy, why would they do that? Because they've just got a grant, right?
Yeah, so Reynolds got bailed out by their government, and I think they've kind of identified that electric is the way forward. So it's kind of proved their investment into electric vehicles. Renault is essentially going to be giving a small isolated town in France, all the residents in this town, the new Renault Zoe EV car for a period of 3 years, which I think is insane. And really, you know, it's a great way to sort of almost trial the technology. It is important to note that there's only about 26 people in this town anyways. So it's not very big, but it gives you a good understanding of just, you know, the kind of capabilities and what your infrastructure will need to support a small sort of village. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And that that brings us to the end of our news segment. So let's get into some auto talk. And today we're reviewing the Ford Ranger 2-litre bi-turbo wild track 4x4 and kindly reviewed by Lawrence Meany.
All right. So I would like to preface this by saying that I'm in no way, shape or form a Ford fanboy. Keep that in mind.
Who's not a Ford fanboy?
Yeah, I was about to say, who in the world?
All right, so I'm quite sure you guys have all been to a braai or a social gathering. At some point, the conversation talks to who has the best double cab. All right, so let me just start off by saying that I'm in no way, shape, or form a Ford fanboy. It's very important to remember. So you guys have all been to a braai or a social gathering or something where at some point the conversation always turns to which manufacturer has the best double cab. And I've personally seen these.
How many beers are you down before you have the discussion? Which is the best?
You'll be surprised. And I've personally seen these escalate from Hilux versus Ford into full-blown fisty fights. You know, it's crazy. It's an interesting question because when it comes to double cabs, every year that title seems to change hands. And at this exact moment, I feel that Ford has the upper hand here. The Ford Ranger Wildtrak, in its current incarnation that we have now on the market, is probably the best double cab that you can get for your money. In terms of exterior styling, interior equipment, technology, and then, of course, what really sets this vehicle apart is the engine and the drivetrain. So this new Wildtrak is fitted with the engine and drivetrain that are fitted to all of their new big vehicles, which I've now had the pleasure of driving. So you're going to get the same 2-litre bi-turbo and 10-speed automatic transmission in the Raptor, it's in the new Everest, and it's in the Wildtrak. And I have to admit that this is probably the best driving double cab. It's the best drivetrain as a whole in this vehicle size segment. And unfortunately, it's the draw card when it comes to this argument of who has the best double cab. So
there, Lawrence, with regard to that, let's just say hypothetically I have the previous model. Is this worth maybe, or is it specific for people who, for instance, want to go off-roading versus, you know, if I'm just using it as a daily driver, is this something
This is the interesting thing is, and it's something I mentioned in the article that's up on site. This Wildtrak will be at home in Melrose Arch or on the farm. It is capable everywhere. You know, the problem with a lot of double cabs is that they're either a workhorse or they're soft. And, you know, they're meant for urban environment. So where the wild track comes in, it's a good mix of both. So you have essentially what is an SUV with a load bay. Leather interior, all of the tech, Sync 3 Apple CarPlay, USB ports, and a 230-volt inverter inside the car. So you can actually run, you know, electrical appliances in the vehicle. It's that kind of thing.
Don't tell anybody. And then you might want to run a hairdryer.
Yeah, if you were that way inclined. Then you have, of course, the drivetrain, which is the big talking point about this vehicle, and the 4x4 system. This is the only thing that separates this from the Raptor is the Raptor has the Fox suspension system, which sort of gives you an idea of just how well this car drives. Engine's going to put out 157 kilowatts, 500 Newton meters, and you're still going to get 8.1 liters per 100 kilometers on a tank of diesel. And that's the thing that got me completely is this is a diesel, but when you get in and you push the start button, it sounds like a petrol. It's that quiet. It really is an amazing piece of tech. And, you know, for in the double cab stakes, it's 753,000 Rand. You know, if someone gave me the choice between a Hilux and this, I'm going to take this every time. Sorry, Hilux.
Yeah, so what about Amarok against that?
Well, you see, at the bottom of my article, I said I'm not going to include things like the Amarok because, well, in a few years, the Amarok is going to be made by Ford anyway. So, you know, currently they don't have a small diesel engine vehicle with the same level of tech and luxury. They only have the 3-liter V6. I'm not going to talk about the Navara and the X-Class because, well, they're technically the same thing. And, yeah, Isuzu's still got some big shoes to fill. So at the moment, at the top of the list, you have Hilux and Ford, and that's the battle that's going to rage in, you know, forever.
Want to know, how did you get to, 8.2 liters per 100?
Driving like an old man.
Because I reviewed one of those, a four-wheel drive last year, also with a twin-turbo engine. And I struggle to get it below 10 liters per 100 in my normal driving.
Even with me bombing through the outback just down the road here from me, going off-roading and driving at high speed, I still managed to get, you know, just close to the 8.6. And I think that is what ultimately surprised me, because when I had the Raptor on test and I took that down to Durban, I couldn't crack 9.
Wow.
And that was on the open freeway. So that was one of the things that I was looking at. So really, in all honesty, at this point in time, the Ranger has the crown for best double cab in the country. Fight me in the comments.
Well, I have to agree with you. I also found it objectively very, very difficult to fault last year. This I kind of came to the same conclusion that that's probably the best balanced of the top line buckies out there at the moment.
And well, for the price you could.
Let's be honest. You know, the Amarok doesn't feature in this battle, even in car search, right, Wandy? Because the top two most searched for double cabs are Toyota Hilux and Ford Ranger.
Mm. Yeah, that is true. I mean, Amarok does feature in third, but I mean the sheer dominance that the Ford Ranger and Hilux has on the bucky segments is just, you know, it's unparalleled. They are fan favorites. And like Lauren said, you know, they cause fights at Braai's, wherever exactly. Lauren stays.
Next year, though, that title could change hands because we have a new Hilux on the way. So, yeah, maybe things will change if Toyota comes to the party and changes the interior and maybe spices the outside up a bit. You know, we might have a new title contender. But at this point in time, Ranger all the way. Not a fanboy.
Well, there you go. Lawrence Meany, not a fanboy. Thank you, Lawrence, for the review of the Ford Ranger 2-liter bi-turbo wild track 4x4. Go and have a look on autotrader.co.za. Go to reviews and you will find the review by Lawrence of this Ford Ranger. And go and judge it for yourself. Give some comments to Lawrence. I'm sure he'll defend his position, and I'm sure he has slowly but surely become a Ford fanboy. In other auto news, Mini SE is to become SA's least expensive electric car. I mean, it's still not cheap at 642,000 Rand for the Trim S and the flagship Trim L to be 722,000 Rand. But I'm more interested in the fact that we're actually going to have another small electric car besides the BMW i3. Martin, what does the BMW i3 go for in relation to this Mini at 642 entry?
Let me verify that for you quickly, George. But
I think it's in the mid 700s, right? Checked,
it was around 720,000 for the entry level i3 fully electric.
Okay, so you can get a top spec Trim L Mini for the price of an entry level BMW i3 electric car, which is brilliant because now we're starting with the electric car wars, and it's really nice to be talking about this. So this Mini electric is expected to touch down in South Africa before the end of this year, being 2020 that we are in. Don't forget, 2020 has not sailed by yet, and the Mini electric is supposed to be here before the end of the year, and 642,000 Rand, 722,000 Rand. In terms of spec, Lawrence, what can this car do, and why should people even consider it?
Well, it's a Mini, so it's smaller than the i3. I actually have to go and check and see what kind of tech and stuff that they've included. But from the pictures I can see, it looks like all the standard fare that you get in the normal Mini. Where things like the BMW i3, I'm quite sure that you will all agree with me, it's a little bit sparse inside there with its plant-based Kevlar door panels and stuff.
And it looks weird.
Let me just tell you, BMW gave me the i3 to drive for a week a while ago, and I absolutely loved that i3. So, you know, I'm not going to judge the i3 until I get to drive this Mini, but I loved that i3, you know, and I drove the Tesla.
It's very avant-garde.
Yeah.
From the pictures that I've seen, it looks like they've retained everything that's Mini in the car. So you still get that big binnacle in the middle with all of the infotainment and all the normal screens, but I think you're just missing the actual engine and gear lever.
Well, they've turned it into screens, right?
This is one thing that really stands out to me is the range of this Mini, which I think might become a problem. I'm not sure what the range is in the i3, but this Mini says, well, the Mini says they claim that it's going to do around 217 Ks on a full charge. So
i3 is around 230.
i3 is so not much better.
It's actually
not much better. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, they use the same mechanical bits. The Mini is essentially, or the Mini Cooper SE is essentially the engine and drivetrain and battery systems from an i3 packed into a Mini.
Oh, there it is. Oh,
there you go.
It's heavier because it's steel construction instead of carbon fiber. And I don't think it's quite as space efficient either. But apart from that, it's basically an i3 in a Mini body shell.
Well, yeah. Then the only last thing to say about this Mini is I don't like the rims. It has got really not great rims. I was going to use another word, but those rims balance to me. Maybe when they're spinning, they'll look better, but I don't like the rims.
No. Have a look
at the rims. Out of 10, and then we move on to a very interesting story, but out of 10, Lawrence, what would you give those rims?
Probably a 2 because they remind me of the Persian Citra C3 Aircross.
Yes, you're right. Martin, out of 10, what do you give those rims?
I'd give the rims a solid 6, actually.
Wow.
Because they remind me of my youth when asymmetric wheels were just the thing.
Wendy, what's your vote on these rims?
I give them a 4. I don't know why electric car companies keep doing this. I don't know why we have to use rims that are, you know, this weird sort of assembly to identify them as an electric car. Just do the normal rims and we'll all be happy.
Mini is not an electric car company. Just saying. Anyway, Mercedes-Benz walked away from Tesla in 2014. And in Daimler, which bears the name of the man who invented the modern car 134 years ago, bought nearly 10% in Tesla in May 2009 in a deal which provided $50 million as a lifeline for the struggling startup. The investment gave Mercedes engineers an inside view of how Elon Musk was willing to launch technology that wasn't perfect and then repeatedly upgrade it using smartphone-style over-the-air updates, paying little regard to early profitability. Mercedes engineers helped Tesla develop its first Model S premium sedan in exchange for access to Tesla's partially hand-assembled battery packs. But in 2014, Daimler decided to sell its stake in Tesla and had doubts over Tesla's approach and that it could be industrialized at scale. Well, Tesla proved everybody freaking wrong, including Daimler. And Tesla then went on to pioneer new approaches in manufacturing design, in software and electronic architecture, which enabled it to introduce innovations faster than any other rival, leaving analysts to draw comparisons with Apple. Because let's face it, the Tesla is an iPhone on wheels. It is just beautiful and it works. So I suppose the debate here, and let's spend 2 or 3 minutes talking about this particular thing, and that is Elon Musk is on the edge, or the razor blade edge, of what Mercedes-Benz engineers call a negative aggression, as one dealer will rightly point out, but that he pushes technology to its edge. He's not scared of launching technology that isn't perfect, right, Wandy?
Yeah, so I think this case of Mercedes and Tesla is a clear example of just the direction that the world is going. Elon Musk, he was almost like a maverick in the industry. He really, really, really at the forefront of everything as innovation, and he puts that first above and all, like above profits, above anything. It's to provide a great experience for consumers. And Daimler, they just, they're a more developed and established company that wants to sort of trial things slowly before they can, roll it out across the entire model range. And I think that's basically the downfall of Mercedes in this respect, is that they just couldn't handle the pace that Tesla was moving in.
Yeah, and that is why a company like Apple and a company like Tesla become so successful, because they're not afraid to push the envelope. They're not afraid to launch technologies that aren't entirely perfect. If you remember the initial iPhone back in 2007, when it was launched, there had the footwork on that stage when Steve Jobs made the introduction of the iPhone, because not everything worked. And Tesla, I'm not proposing that people put substandard products out in the market, but then the very, very quick and rapid iteration of bringing the product to perfection by using your user base as as the feedback is important. And I think Steve Jobs and both Elon Musk have done exactly the same thing, and that's what you're referring to, right, Wandy?
Yeah, I think it almost takes me back to the story we did about BMW offering upgrade services over the air, or online rather.
Yeah.
What Tesla has here is it's not necessarily putting out a substandard product, but they're putting out a product which can be, almost enhanced over time, which is not, it's not adding additional cost to the consumer. It's giving them a base product which they basically trial. And they can see how to, better manage and better prepare it and make it for the end user, which I think it's such a simple concept, which a simple concept in user interface design, which I think, they've got it spot on. I don't think anybody else will be a threat to them because of it.
Okay, cool. Yo, Martin has somebody at his gate to collect what I believe is a review car, right, Martin?
Yes, George, it's a Jeep Wrangler. I just spent a week with it, and they're coming to take it away now.
I know. All right, so let's look at Martin's chair for 5 minutes while he goes and stick yourself on mute there, Martin, and go and give the car back. And then we'll hear about that Jeep Wrangler, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yep, I'll see you again now.
All right, well, that gets us into some crazy talk. And our first story in crazy talk is that what is the average employee at Tesla earn as Elon Musk is about to take a 34 billion rand payout? Wendy, what does the average employee at Tesla earn?
So at Tesla, the average employee earns on average around 950,000 rand a year, or 79,000 rand a month. But of course, you have to take that in consideration that the standard of living in the USA is a lot higher than South Africa. So it is above the average in the US, but I think it just shows that across the entire board, they are trying to take care of their employees, and that results in great products.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the things you have to do is you have to pay your employees a fair income, and you know, for the role that you expect them to perform. And Tesla seems to be one of those businesses who pays a fair income. Does Tesla pay their employees in stock like Amazon does? Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I do know that Elon, a large part of his compensation for the company comes in
share options.
Which basically unlocks at different points depending on how well the stock of the company is doing. So, for instance, this 34 billion rand that payout that he just received is part of that step by step process and him getting the potential 100% payout that the shareholders have granted him.
Yeah. So
if he wants to get more money, he better stay off Twitter.
Or don't smoke weed inside Joe Rogan's show.
Yeah.
Well, Tesla stock surged by more than 500% over the last year as the company increased sales of the Model 3 sedan. Now, if you remember, Tesla's whole business model was create a sports car in a niche segment, build a brand, then create a luxury saloon, which they did in the Model S, and then create a car for the masses, almost like the Ford Model T, right, Lawrence? I mean, that's what he did. He brought the cost down, and Elon Musk's idea is that the cost of the Model 3 needs to come down over time. Now, I've got another question for you, but, what do you think about the strategy, Lawrence, and is Elon Musk onto something, and is this company going to continue to increase in value?
So, at some point, somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has to be the one that's going to say, all right, all the R&D on electric cars is done. Now the price of the vehicles has to start coming down. The R&D has been paid for. We have to reach that point where electric vehicles are not going to be cost prohibitive anymore. And I think Tesla has reached that point now where all their R&D is done. The vehicles are as good as they're going to get, except for the batteries, because, well, there's always going to be development there. But the cost of the vehicle has to start coming down because you're no longer paying for the research and development there.
Yeah.
So, yes, the Model 3 is going to become the Model T in Tesla's range. I think as the infrastructure gets better and the technology for batteries gets better and the overall idea the mind shift of the consumer to, okay, electric cars, no more range anxiety. I don't have to worry about it. As soon as that happens, then yes, the company is going to continue growing. And they're growing to the point now where he can come out and say, hey, you know what? Other OEM manufacturers, you want some batteries? I can hook you up, bro.
Yeah, exactly. That's what those gigafactories are for. And, I suppose a lot of people ask, well, why aren't there Teslas in South Africa? Why hasn't Elon Musk brought Teslas to South Africa? I think it's a little known that the only reason Tesla has launched in a lot of other countries, and, potentially not in South Africa, is because of this thing called government subsidy. So if you remember, Tesla got its success out of a government subsidy that drove the US government was handing out money, and they handed it out to Tesla in order to go down the road of becoming a clean energy company and to move the world towards electric. And so Tesla has launched in other countries with similar government subsidies. And in South Africa, well, I don't know if that's possible. It's highly unlikely that that the government is going to give electric car subsidies. And one of the reasons our electric cars are now that expensive is because the petrol fuel levy is no longer applicable, and there's no subsidy involved in the manufacture of electric cars. So they have to be imported, which then attracts tax north of 25%. And so it makes the Mini come in at 622,000 Rand and the BMW i3 come in at 730,000 Rand, which then you can't blame the car manufacturers because profits on cars are very thin. They're not big. And so it is more a factor of government subsidies that Tesla is not in South Africa than it is on the actual price of the car or the lack of willingness for Tesla to come to South Africa. Right, Wandy?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, there's lots of talks within the government and with, you know, with all the industry players with regards to pushing this forward or getting some sort of resolve with the government. I don't think we're going to have to wait too long before that happens. When I say too long, I mean like 5-10 years.
Yeah.
Before we add a stage where we can finally start adopting electric tech a lot more and scaling it a lot more. Yeah, future's bright.
Well, I mean, the best way to bring electric cars to South Africa is to make them here, because then we don't suffer from all of those things with government subsidies, and then the prices will come down. But we're in the crazy talk segment, and in other crazy talk, a chase ends when a man in a stolen SUV crashes into a woman that was driving a stolen car. So I found this quite a funny story, Wandy. Tell us what happened.
It's basically your basic plot from a romantic movie. You know, guy meets girl. The only difference here is that it came from two criminals who essentially had stolen different cars, different stories, and unfortunately they collided. And yeah, they both got arrested, but it's just the most bizarre thing to happen, whereas one person who stolen a car crashes into another person. Whilst they're both evading the cops. It was just,
it sounds so sweet.
Sounds like a Hallmark.
By accident.
They met by accident and they were both criminals.
Yeah, this sucks for the people who actually own the vehicles, because, you know, they basically have to incur the total cost of this match made in heaven, which is, you know, something that, you know, nobody wants to do. So it sucks for them.
Well, anyway, in other crazy talk, a company by the name of Nikola wants you to drink Badger pickup trucks' fuel cell generated water. So this is a hydrogen cell car, or pickup truck, should I say. And you know that the byproduct of a hydrogen cell car is water. Well, not entirely, because Martin will point out that this is distilled water. And distilled water contains no minerals, very little by way of sustenance. So would you drink the water that is distilled out of a hydrogen fuel cell car? Lawrence, would you?
I have, actually. When I went to China a few years ago and I visited a factory that makes hydrogen fuel cells. And part of the tour was, drink this. It's what comes out of the fuel cell.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, it tastes like nothing. It has no taste. You know, like our tap water has a taste. Bottled water has a taste. This tasted like nothing. It was like licking a piece of paper. So yes, I have done it. Would I do it again? No.
Look, it won't kill you. It won't hurt you. But it's probably best to not only drink that.
That's like filtering your own. Well, maybe I shouldn't say it.
Water world.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it comes out clean on the other end. Is it good for you? Probably does nothing for you. So, would I drink it? Probably not. If it doesn't sustain the body, what's the point?
No, agreed. Definitely.
And in other crazy talk, a dog-like robot is helping Ford to retool its plants. So I'm sure you've seen the dog-like robots in what's that company's name, Wandy? Boston Dynamics. There we go. So Boston Dynamics. So everybody knows or probably has seen the dog in Boston Dynamics. So the dog is now scouring the floor of Ford factories to fetch pictures and videos of the factory and with its five eyes to help engineers upgrade its workspaces and designs. Tell us a little bit more about this one, Dile.
So I don't know if anybody's seen a review of this dog. It's incredibly smart, but its main feature is the fact that it has these incredible cameras that can basically scan the area that's around it. And using that tech, basically Ford has commissioned these robots to assist the engineers in building better workstations for, you know, everything that's happening with all the tools that's happening in their factories. But this is, you know, this could be the end. This could be the end of Ford, because these robots are incredibly smart. And I'm scared. I'm scared of them personally. It's my own.
What do you mean the end of Ford?
You know, these robots might take over. Terminator might start in the Ford factory.
Well, anyway, Boston Dynamics has coined the name for this little dog named Spot. You know what this thing costs? A million rand. One little robot costs R1 million. But hopefully they can get R1 million's worth of efficiency out of...
When you have a robot that can open doors and climb stairs and do backflips, yeah, I think it's worth $1 million.
Also, don't ever kick it because it might just remember your face.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. It could remember who you are.
It actually stand out there. Sorry, George. On that story, there's a sticker on the robot, on this dog robot, called, and it says, "Service dog, do not pet." So that's the first thing. The other thing is it actually climbs on top of another robot named Scooter to travel longer distances.
That's this robot. All right. Well, be careful of it. And another question I have for you guys is, how long have you had your phone numbers, Lawrence?
Current number, 5 years. Number before that, 14. And the number before that, 6.
Interesting. Wandy?
Yeah, the current number I have, I've also had it for about 6 years.
Okay. Martin, how long have you had your phone number for?
The current one for about 12 years and the one before that for 8 years.
Okay. So, you know, all of us have had our telephone numbers, including me. I've had my number for probably about 2 decades. And a woman has gotten Elon Musk's old telephone number. And she says people will not stop texting her. So Lindsay Tucker tells an unknown incoming texter or caller that they have the wrong number. The person on the other side doesn't want to believe her. They think she's playing some sort of game or simply lying on behalf of the person he or she attempted to reach, which in this case is Elon Musk. And, you know,
that's insane. Like, imagine the amount of calls that you get if you have Elon Musk's old number. And the strangest messages. That must be like a security risk for Tesla, I would assume, because, you know, all these friends.
Can I just say that my personal number at the moment is 1 digit off of Parmalat in the Eastern Cape. So I get weekly people looking for Parmalat, this person at Parmalat, and I'm like, dude, check the number, you're 1 digit off. What are you gonna do?
So one of the calls that she got was from the IRS. And in another, somebody asked her to order 1,000 Cybertrucks, and another text sent a picture of a Terminator-like hand with an expression of interest in working together on bionics. So, you know, you can imagine the kinds of crazy things Elon Musk must be getting if this lady is getting all of the would-be Elon Musk texts, right?
Yeah, that was probably worth a lot, because imagine the connections you'd be able to sort of forge off the fact that it's such a famous phone number.
Well,
it doesn't help if you're a suburban housewife.
and that brings us to the end of that segment. Well, my name is George Minnie, and let's get into some industry talk. And today I'm joined by Lawrence Minnie, Wandile Sishi, Martin Pretorius, and we're going to talk all things industry. And first, we're going to start off with Toyota's renewed, or should I say confirmed, hybrid build in South Africa. Now, they still won't confirm what car it is, but Toyota is set to be the first hybrid Synergy Drive car on the African continent, and it's going to be at the Prospecten plant in Durban as part of a 2.5 billion rand investment in a new production line. Now, the CEO of Toyota confirmed this last week, saying that the investment is still on track despite the economic impact of COVID-19 local and international markets. So I'm looking forward to Toyota, you know, building this hybrid in South Africa. I mean, my big question is, why not? Does Toyota, I think we spoke about this before, Wandi, does Toyota think that the future of the South African automotive industry is hybrid because of our lack of infrastructure? Why do you think hybrid? I mean, this is now being confirmed and represents a 2.5 billion rand investment as part of Toyota's broader and more than 4 billion rand investment into local auto industries over the past few years. So they're true to their word, and they're going to do this. But my big question is, why hybrid?
I think it has a lot to do with the country as a whole. I don't think this is Toyota's last investment that they'll be doing. They've been around in South Africa for the longest time, and they have almost a tradition of trialing things out. And I think hybrid for them right now just makes sense from a trialing perspective. And I think once they can get that right, the pivot to electric would be a lot easier.
You think so?
I because, don't know the stats I mean, in terms of
electric,
I'd assume that hybrids are a little bit more popular.
It isn't, because we saw during lockdown on Autotrader that the searches for Prius fell through the floor. Isn't that right?
That is true. They completely dropped off. I think it was about an 85% drop for the Prius. Yes. In June, if I'm not mistaken. So I can't really answer for them, but I do think that it is calculated in terms of the long game.
Yeah.
And you know, the sort of regulations that an OEM has to abide by with regards to you know, the country and the sector that they're in.
Well, I mean, let's see what happens. But according to Toyota, 36% of the Lexus vehicles sold in South Africa are hybrids. And, notwithstanding the fact that we saw the searches for Toyota Prius drop dramatically during lockdown. And, is this a belief that that hybrids are the springboard into electric? Let's see what happens over the coming years. You know, because at the end of the day, we've got to reduce prices of vehicles in South Africa, because the premium car segment of the market is declining by 35%. We've seen a reduction in new car sales in South Africa year on year in the last month, and the premium car segment is 45% down for the first 6 months of the year compared to 2019, and this is according to Jaguar Land Rover. So Wandi, what is going to happen to the premium car segment if we get electric cars that are this expensive? The electric cars are just never going to fly, right?
I think the answer is twofold. Firstly, I don't think these are anything that anybody needs to be afraid of right now, or think that the market's crashing or anything like that. The automotive market in South Africa is extremely, there's lots of volatility. Things change in an instant. So just because Jaguar Land Rover is seeing a decline of around 45% for the premium markets doesn't necessarily mean that in the next 3 months it's going to be the same. I think anybody who's invested within this market, within the premium car market, should just kind of almost future-proof or plan for the future instead of looking at only now. I think the bigger picture is more important than one stat that's come out this month.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we can all agree that the sustainable downward pressure on new cars is going to be with us, and the swing to is going to stay with us for the foreseeable future. You know, at least I think until 2022. But there are premium segment used cars as well, and from a search point of view on autotrader.co.za, we're not seeing a fall off in the premium segment, right, Wandy?
No, not at all. I think, in fact, it actually trickled down across all product ranges. But as soon as lockdown level 3 started to trickle in, we saw increases in searches across the entire across the entire market. So I think things are going to, you know, get worse before they get better. But when they do get better, it's going to be great for everyone, used car and used car.
Exactly. So you know, while this sharp decline is in the new car segment, we're not seeing the sharp decline in the used car segment, and that is because South Africa is, you know, we keep saying South Africa is a car-faring nation. The UK fits into South Africa roughly 9 times, and we have to use cars in this country because the public transport infrastructure is also not there, and so. So the swings and roundabouts, as Wandy puts it, you know, will keep users or car buyers buying cars, even if it is a swing from new to used. So in other industry news, we are launching the 2020 Autotrader Car Industry Report today. If you haven't downloaded it, go to reports.autotrader.co.za, and that is available as our annual industry report. And it gives some insights into the impact of COVID-19 on the automotive used car market. And you know, we unpack it, and we have some special commentary from NAAMSA CEO Mike Mabasa, and we unpack the demand, price, and supply metrics for the year ending June 2020. So that begs the question, how is COVID-19 changing car buying trends? And are South Africans likely to stop buying cars? Now, what I mean by stop buying cars is there another model in the future? Are we going to lease cars? Now, Wandy, you and I spoke about this in the past. You're squarely a millennial. Have you thought about not buying a car and rather renting it? And have you ever looked into it?
So for me, cars have just become extremely expensive in terms of the cost to maintain them. And because there's so many other alternatives to buying a car now, where you can just, for instance, rent a car or use an e-hailing service, the need for a car to me has completely diminished to a point of my next car, am I going to buy it? Or would I just use one of these other services, which would, you know, be more economical to my pocket? It's completely shaping and changing how OEMs are going to be doing business. But I think it's kind of exciting to see that these sort of options are available to consumers, because at the end of the day, consumers are king, and they drive how the market performs.
Exactly. Consumers are king, and especially in the world of the internet with transparency, there is no such thing as pushing products onto consumers anymore. Consumers will decide what demand looks like. And in the world of the COVID-19 pandemic, it has changed the way people shop for cars, consume media, travel, gather, and work, as a matter of fact. And it's had a massive impact on the automotive industry, and we can't deny that. But the good news is that in some countries, and South Africa is part of this, it may actually have had a positive impact. And there's a fascinating report called Automotive and Mobility, and the Impact of COVID-19 on the Category in the Medium Term by a company by the name of Kantar. Now, remember, Kantar used to be called TNS Global, and they're a London-based data insights and consulting company. And the report notes that while the toughest weeks of toughest weeks of lockdown, global new car sales dropped by up to 80% compared to previous years. But future prospects are not that dismal. The good news is that across all markets, most of those intending to buy a car pre-COVID-19 claimed that they are not giving up on their plan to purchase, but are considering postponing their purchases after the crisis. So you've got these two schools of thought. One, postpone the purchase of the car, and two, change what they or how they actually own a car, because possession is 9/10 of the law. And even if you rent a car, effectively you're getting the same benefit. I mean, I always say that buying a house with the bank's money is not an investment because you're renting money. Whereas when you rent a house, you're renting a house. And there's this stigma attached to renting, which I think is a bad thing. So will this stigma extend to vehicles? When you rent a vehicle, is it going to look like you don't own the vehicle? I don't think that that's going to be the case in the view of people like Wandile Sishi at his age. He won't care whether he's renting a car or whether he owns a car. It doesn't matter. It performs a certain function. And 9% of South Africans have reconsidered buying a vehicle, according to Kantar. And in less mature markets, the scenario is even more positive in that COVID-19 crisis is actually motivating people to buy their first car. The Kantar report also notes that for many households, owning an individual vehicle during and after the COVID-19 pandemic will be a safe way to stay mobile without being exposed to the social interactions experienced with public transport. And I said this the other day, that your vehicle is effectively a safety bubble and the ability to get out and about without being exposed. I read some reports that people are encouraging the World Health Organization to acknowledge that the virus is airborne. That's not official yet, so don't take what I'm saying as official. But inside your car, you know, you could be a lot safer. And South Africa is one such market. According to Kantar, 9% of South African respondents to the survey had no plans to buy a car before COVID-19, but now considering it. And you know, Auto Trader is seeing an explosion of search on our website.
Yeah, never a time have I seen data become so important in terms of understanding and prepping for the future. I think the COVID-19 time has kind of highlighted that not just we're seeing an increase in searches, but we're also seeing changes in behavior. And these changes are really, you know, giving us insights into what the market actually wants or what vehicles should be put out into the market to meet this demand that we're seeing. It's exciting to know that, you know, now dealers and people within the industry can finally be able to, you know, get more insights with regards to providing a better service and providing products that would move a lot quicker. It's really not doom and gloom. I think there's lots of opportunities that are going to come out of this. But I must reiterate that it is important to just plan for that and look at the long game instead of the short term sort of goals.
Exactly. And then to wrap it up, what forms of vehicle ownership are there? And those people who buy vehicles, what form of ownership will they use? According to this Kantar report, the financial security is top of mind amongst consumers. Significantly, it has found that the more the pandemic continues, the more financial uncertainty is a growing concern among the general population. Even more so than health concerns is financial concerns. Accordingly, car buyers will be risk adverse and will want to avoid any form of personal financial strain. So hence, alternative forms of vehicle ownership may be the way forward. Leasing or renting, for instance, that we were talking about. Typically, rentals have been favored by corporates in the past. However, bearing in mind that the findings of this Kantar report, in the financial report, there is every reason to expect them to find increasing favor with consumers too. This is because many of the same benefits apply to private consumers with a rented car. You know exactly what you're going to spend each month, minimizing financial uncertainty. So is this a thing of the future? I don't know, but it's probably something that we should close watch. And that brings us to the end of our industry segment. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining. And we will see you next time. My name is George Meany, and have a safe week. So, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of our week's Auto Central show. Any final thoughts, Lawrence?
Not much. If you can, get out there, support your local businesses. Everybody needs every bit of help they can get at the moment. Stay away from the illicit stuff. But exactly. Try and help where you can.
Alrighty then. That's very good advice from our very own Lawrence Meany. Thank you, Lawrence. So, Wandile Sishi, any final thoughts?
Just stay vigilant. We're seeing an increase in hijacking, so just be alert when you out on the roads. Your life is a lot more important than a car. So, yeah, stay safe.
Exactly. And then finally, Martin Pretorius, any final thoughts?
Well, thank you, Lawrence and Wandy, for already saying exactly what I was going to say. stay safe, stay alert, and even with all that, try and stay positive as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Keep your mind in the right place. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this week's Auto Central show. And my name,
Auto Trader on cliffcentral.com.
Well, that brings us to the end of our week's Auto Central show. My name is George Meany, and thank you for joining me and us. And we will see you next time.
Cliffcentral.com.